From the Moan Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm John Horn. Here's our lineup for today. The Lucas Museum won't open until late next year, but it already has acquired a significant collection of Black American film ephemera. Then director Alma Harrell on her new film, Honey Boy. Shia LaBeouf plays a somewhat fictionalized version of his alcoholic ex-rodeo clown father. The movie wasn't easy to make.
A lot of people that heard that I'm doing this project said, don't do it. This is like, it's a trap. Like, you know, why would you want to do it? And they really thought that finding the right tone would be really hard.
All that coming up on The Frame. The Lucas Museum hasn't yet opened its doors, but the Narrative Art Space just announced a major acquisition, an extensive archive of Black American cinema, movie posters, and film stills called Separate Cinema. The Lucas Museum is currently under construction at Exposition Park near downtown LA. It's scheduled to open in late 2021. The museum's film curator is Ryan Linkoff. Ryan, welcome to The Frame.
Thank you for having me.
The collection is called Separate Cinema. Can you explain what's behind the name and how it defines what is included in the archive?
We were actually just having this conversation with the founder of the archive, John Kish. The name comes kind of out of a specific historical moment, specifically the kind of first half of the 20th century, the 20s, 30s, and 40s in particular, which saw the proliferation of a film industry really defined around African-American filmmakers, producers, directors, actors, really kind of films made for and by an African-American audience. And in a way, those existed outside of the mainstream methods of making movies and the distribution channels. So they really were, in some ways, a kind of separate track of film production, distribution, and consumption. For that reason, I think it's a way of kind of identifying the ways in which a film industry kind of developed for a particular market that is, in some ways, obviously always entwined in a broader mainstream history, but also has its own kind of internal integrity. That said, the materials in the collection are both made by Black filmmakers for Black audiences, and obviously films produced by the mainstream, majority white film production industry for broader audiences as well.
I'm going to play a clip from a film from 1943. It's called A Cabin in the Sky. It starred Lena Horne, Ethel Waters, and Eddie Anderson. Interestingly, it was directed by Vincente Minnelli, who did Gigi and American in Paris. But let's listen to this good example of what you're talking about in terms of separate cinema. It's a scene from A Cabin in the Sky.
You'll hurry along, won't you?
Oh, we'll be there all right.
And Reverend, when you call on the sinners to confess, you better assign me the rest of the evening.
Oh, you're not that bad, Joseph.
Right. Oh, the black sheep come back home. When the sin marched by the foam, shepherd told him through the door, he saved him.
So when you think about this period in film history, why is this period so important in understanding how we got where we are today?
I would say it's really, in some ways, essential to understand the ways in which especially the Hollywood studio system both developed a culture of representing African Americans that was, on the one hand, quite pernicious in the ways that it represented very entrenched stereotypes of the African American experience. And on the other, there were attempts, such as Cabin in the Sky, to produce films that were at least making an attempt to speak in more sensitive and thoughtful ways to an African American audience, by featuring major iconic figures, both within the African-American community and also figures who had a broader kind of popular appeal. And this kind of push-pull, this tension between trying to both represent the African-American experience and also kind of in some ways exploiting and capitalizing on particular stereotypes, I think are really kind of something that we're continuing to live with and continues to play itself out in certain ways. And I think understanding this broader history, especially that kind of early phase, the first half of the 20th century, when the entire film industry in some ways was most thoroughly coming into shape, I think really helps us understand and explain where we are at the present moment.
We're talking with Ryan Linkoff, film curator for the Lucas Museum. I want to ask you about the collection itself. There are thousands of items in it. What was John Kish up to, and how did he assemble all of these things?
Well, so he's been collecting really since, I believe, the 1970s, and acquiring this collection piece by piece through a variety of different outlets, through auctions, through private collections. And he did develop what is by most measures the most impressive and comprehensive archive of material related to African-American cinema, really with the intent of creating an archive that was available for both scholarly research and also public programming and exhibitions to really highlight, celebrate, explore, and examine the broader history of African-American cinema across the 20th century and into the 21st. And he continues to be in conversations with us as new things come to auction and that kind of thing. So we really want to continue that legacy and also make it in the same ways accessible for the research and for the contextualization of the history of African-American cinema.
I want to play a clip from another movie that is a seminal example of Black cinema. This is 1989's Do the Right Thing. In this scene, we're going to hear from a character named Radio Raheem, who's played by Bill Nunn.
One hand is always fighting the other hand, and the left hand is kicking much ass. I mean, it looks like the right hand love is finished. But hold on, stop the presses, the right hand's coming back. Yeah, he got the left hand on the ropes now, that's right. Yeah, ooh, it's a devastating right, and hate is hurt. Down, ooh, ooh, left hand, hey, KO'd by love.
I love this scene, and it made me wonder about how much film presentation and screenings will be part of what this collection is going to be about. Are people going to be able to see movies? Are you going to do screenings and conversations around those films?
So film programming will be a major part of the Lucas Museum's mission going forward. We will have two state-of-the-art theaters for film programming. And it's great that you played a clip from Do the Right Thing, because we are actually organizing a film program in February 8th, that will feature Do the Right Thing as well as The Wiz. We act as a collaboration with the Los Angeles County Museum of Art, and this is really our first attempt at putting together a film program.
I think you're scheduled to open in late 2021. We know maybe the Academy Museum hasn't quite met its deadlines. Are you pretty hopeful that we will have a museum by the end of next year?
We are on schedule to be substantially complete with construction by the end of 2021. We haven't announced an actual opening date for the public, but everything's moving ahead.
Ryan Linkoff is film curator for the Lucas Museum, which just acquired the Separate Cinema Archive, a collection of Black American cinema. Ryan, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Coming up on The Frame, director Alma Harrell. She collaborated with Shia LaBeouf on the most personal and painful story of the actor's career. The new film Honey Boy was written by and stars Shia LaBeouf. It was directed by Alma Harrell, and her involvement in the movie can be traced back to Bob Dylan.
A series of dreams.
That's the Dylan song Series of Dreams, and it's part of the soundtrack to Harrell's boundary-pushing 2011 documentary, Bombay Beach. When LaBeouf stumbled upon the film, he was coming off his third Transformers movie and was looking to do something very different. He was sorting through Bob Dylan albums at Amoeba Records, and the DVD of Harrell's Bombay Beach had been filed in the Dylan section because of its soundtrack. After watching the film, LaBeouf cold emailed Harrell. The two met for dinner in L.A. Here's Harrell talking about what happened next.
He just finished with, I think, that period in his life and was looking to stop making films about, I guess, robots or legends and starting to make films about people. So he was very much, I think, looking for filmmakers that felt like they're doing something the exact opposite direction of that, and that's how he got to me, I guess. And I was making a documentary. I just made a documentary that was very intimate and real and had dance sequences in it and wasn't really fitting into any genre, but had something about it that I guess really touched him. It had a story at the center of it about a child of an alcoholic too, Benny Parrish.
What's this, Mommy?
A bullet.
Oh, that's a bullet.
Can I see it? Can I have it?
Throw that over there, okay?
Can I throw it in the water?
No.
Because it will scare fish?
It might.
Look at the somebody way. Who his own father suffered a lot of trauma, and just I think maybe that story was a point of, probably a touch point for both of us, and we had that dinner and figured out both of us are also children of alcoholics. which was, you know, in many ways the moment we started working on Honey Boy, because subconsciously I feel like that's where the trust started to build to do something that as brave as what he did with this film.
Their first time working together was on a music video that Harrell wrote and directed for the Icelandic band Sigur Rós. LaBeouf and actress Denna Thompson play a couple caught in a cycle of addiction and abuse.
That music video really dealt with things that I was exploring from my own life and childhood and relationships. And we shot it for 2 days. That was the only time I really worked with Shai as an actor, was 2 days. And then I went on to do another documentary, which took almost 4 years to make, and he was an executive producer on it. A few years after that, a year or two after that, he got arrested, and he was court-ordered to go to a mental health facility that's also a rehab institution. And he was diagnosed with very severe PTSD. And as part of his therapy, he was ordered to write, you know, a lot of his memories, and specifically stuff that came out was focused on this period of living in a room in a motel with his father while he was filming Even Stevens on the Disney Channel.
Lewis, how many times have I told you not to leave leftover sushi under your bed?
Look, I'm sorry, there's so many rules in this house, it's hard to keep them all straight.
Copy that, I'll kill the alarm.
Couldn't have been, you know, two more different realities. The reality he was playing on set of a child in this show, and the reality he was living, which is living in a motel room with his father, who was a felon and an alcoholic and an addict and an ex-rodeo clown.
When you read that script that he puts together while he's in rehab, what do you see in it? Because there's so much that he is bearing in terms of his own sobriety, in terms of how he was raised. When you read it, what was the thing that made you think there was a movie to be made with this?
Well, first of all, the specificity of it, of like, I felt I was in that room with him and his father. I read it and I was in that room immediately. And it was some of the most raw stuff I've ever read, but it had the, it was like he was a sniper. I mean, he was writing dialogue that was about, you know, pie fights and clowns and you know, preparing for a children TV show, but underneath it, it was about jealousy and addiction and masculinity and all of the things that a father and a son wrestle with. It was very layered, it was very raw, and it was very real, and I knew I had to make it.
So Shia, at this point in his career, is obviously having issues with addiction and sobriety. He is no longer a big box office star, or certainly not one that a lot of studios are chasing. And he has written a story that is very raw, which is a long way of saying this can't have been that easy a movie to go out and try to sell.
Shia was under the impression that nobody's going to want to make this film. A lot of people weren't talking to him at the time, not even, you know, some of his family, and he was feeling like he couldn't trust the idea that anybody would want to make it. But I actually had a group of people around me that, when they read it, they immediately wanted to commit to it. And we met with Shia, and 3 weeks, I think, or 4 weeks after he got out of that institution, and we were already diving into pre-production, and I was speaking to his therapist on the phone and educating myself about PTSD and the possible triggers and the things that can happen to him when he takes a part like this, you know, and really understanding some of the elements of what that can yield and how to deal with it if it does. And it was a very unique project in that regard, and I think that what he did was an incredible act of courage. You know, he stepped into playing his father. He plays his father in the film, the person who has been the character in his life that have given him so much love for acting and so much love in general, but at the same time was abusive to him at times and was dealing with his own pain and his own addiction, and he inherited a lot of those things that he's battling with from him. So it was an extremely, you know, psycho-magical exorcism of sorts, and definitely not what you would expect from a a film set, but everybody jumped right in.
We're talking with Alma Harrell about her new movie, Honey Boy. You have worked up until this point as a documentary filmmaker. And this film, while it's based on Shia LaBeouf's life, is fictionalized. He plays somebody named James Lort. And then his own younger self at age 12 is played by Noah Jupe, and age 22 by Lucas Hedges. How would you describe what is true and what is fictionalized? And even if you're making things up as a storyteller, what was the truth that you were trying to pursue?
So, I mean, obviously, I have to rely on Shia as my source of truth here, right? Because he wrote the script. I did speak to his father, and one of the first things that he did before we even signed up to make this film is that I asked him to go to South America and reconnect with his father. His father and him haven't spoken for 7 years. And he went there and read him the script. And his father signed, you know, an agreement with us and agreed for us to make the film. So that was like a really good step towards having faith together with Shia, both of us having faith that we're doing the right thing. And I think that seeing all the photos and the things that I could get my hands of, like a wedding tape and meeting with Shia's mom and just researching it, it was something that was very important to me because I wanted to rely on some of the truthfulness of the story, but also allow us to step out of it and make it about, not just about Shia. And this was the difference, I think, that about this film and made it so interesting to me, and I think to Noah Jupe and to Lucas Hedges, who are both such exceptionally intelligent actors that are very, very intuitive, but at the same time were able to fully grasp the meta aspect of this film because, you know, we're all like watching YouTube clips of Shia and watching Even Stevens and like referencing all the time to each other. But we also wanted pick and choose and only take certain things so we're not doing an impression of somebody, and it's not a caricature and it's not a biopic, it's something else. And I think in that space between being truthful to the real things that happen in that room, in that motel room, and entering that trauma, but also being able to comment on fame and comment on performance of self and about finding your own voice as a cure to childhood trauma, all of those things were as important. And really finding the way to walk this line. A lot of people that heard that I'm doing this project said, don't do it. This is like, it's a trap. Like, you know, why would you want to do it? And they really thought that finding the right tone would be really hard. But to me, that was from the start what made this beautiful, is finding that tone and doing something that doesn't exist necessarily in any genre and transcends all of those things into something else.
Up next on The Frame, more of my conversation with Alma Harrell, who directed Shia LaBeouf in Honey Boy. She explains what it was like to direct LaBeouf in scenes based on traumatic events from his childhood. Now let's get back to my conversation with Alma Harrell, the director of the film Honey Boy. It was written by Shia LaBeouf, who plays a version of his own father in the film. The Shia character is named Otis, and Lucas Hedges plays him as an adult. In this scene, Otis is being treated for PTSD during a court-mandated stay in rehab.
What is this? What are you trying to do? You can't have me in the room knitting for 2 hours.
How are your suds right now?
70.
Okay, let's bring it down. I want you to name 4 objects and let them bring you to the
door,
moment.
Face, light bulb.
Snap the rubber band with each item.
Shoo, shoo, shoo.
In another scene, Otis tells his counselor, "The only thing my father gave me that was worth anything was pain, and you're trying to take it away from me." LaBeouf wrote the line based on his own experience, but Harrell says it meant something to her as well.
I think that many artists that have found solace in art I would say filmmaking and finding my own voice has saved my life, you know, and getting a sense of self, getting something you could do that helps you break through the habitual way of causing more pain to yourself and to others, or just not knowing the difference sometimes between love and pain and chaos. Those are things that on one end you inherit, and then and on the other they are sometimes really the material you work with. They make you empathetic towards certain stories. They give you that extra sense of understanding people that are interesting characters. And a lot of your art sometimes comes from working that pain, you know, and painting with that pain. And when you try to, I guess, heal, or when you try to really move away from living your life in a certain way, you often become very insecure about your ability to play outside that sandbox. And I think that what Shia was trying to, what Shia is saying in that sentence is really describing his, you know, it's kind of like dilemma that you never fully sort of resolve until you find new tools. And one of the biggest challenges of every child of an alcoholic, I think, or a child, any addict or person that went through childhood trauma and found their way into art, is to, how do you make things, and how do you stay creative when if you stop only doing it from using your pain, and how do you move away from that? And that's still a mystery, I think, both to Shia and to me. And we're definitely, I think, trying to find new tools.
This is a story about somebody who is suffering from PTSD, and he hasn't been on the battlefield, but he has endured a different kind of trauma, and that is the psychological and physical violence that a parent can inflict on a child. And you have to depict that, and that means that you're going to show things that are happening between the fictionalized version of Shia's dad, played by Shia, and a young boy, played by Noah Jupe, and you are having to go into some very dark and difficult places. As you're watching this, as Shia is acting in it, as Noah is acting in it, what were those scenes like to film?
You know, shooting this film and being behind the monitor and seeing sometimes that room that everything took place in, and understanding that Shia was diagnosed with PTSD from a few events in his life, three really, and this is one of them. This period is one of them. He's spoken in public about a few of the other ones before. But really understanding how little he was, which I think a lot of children that are now adults and have suffered childhood trauma, one of the things they don't remember is how little they were. Because you, when you have these memories, you kind of remember yourself as an adult, you know, and you remember yourself as you don't know your size. You remember the other people around you. You remember your feelings. You don't understand in your memories how little you were. And to step into this and play out some of that with somebody who's Noah Jupe's age, who was 12 at the time, and then watching that from the monitor, and both seeing Shia reenacting them and getting to see how little he was, developing empathy to his own father while doing it, and to himself, which is sometimes the hardest thing to do. And then just remembering moments with my own father, like, you know, the moment when he sits on the floor and speaks to his dad when his dad is sitting on the toilet after a rough night. And I remember some of the most profound conversations I've had with my dad were when he was sitting on the toilet and I was sitting on the floor talking to him. And it really was, you know, hard to contain the emotions, and I would often cry by the monitor, and I thought that that was really a really good experience, to kind of feel like you could be, as a director, very vulnerable and still be a boss, and not feel like you have to be this, like, you know, picture that we do have of a masculine dictator that knows everything and always heads towards the right direction and never shows any feelings. And not to say all directors are like that, but definitely that cliche is very big in a lot of sets. And so it was like the opposite experience, you know. It was very much a set where there was a lot to get through, and sometimes the only way out is through the pain. And we challenged ourselves with that. There were days I didn't know how we're going to make it to the other side, but we did.
Alma, thanks so much for coming back on The Frame.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
That was Alma Harrell, the director of Honey Boy. You can find Honey Boy on Amazon Prime. And since we taped that interview with Alma Harrell, she won the first time feature film award from the Directors Guild of America. And that is it for today. I'm John Horn at the Moon Broadcast Center at KPCC. We're back here tomorrow.